This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled A Most Incredible Witness. And joining me from California is author Emily L. Pitsford. Welcome to the program, Emily.
Thank you so much for having me.
Pleasure to talk with you. This is under difficult circumstances that this book was written. This is the tale and the story of your personal journey, plus the journey of your son, Tim, who is a center point focus of this book. Tim was a witness in an unusual set of circumstances, and share with my listeners a little of his story.
Well, Wednesday morning on September 1st, he called me. And he was a little shaken. This is year 2010, by the way. And he was shaking, so I asked him what was wrong. And he said he just witnessed a car accident where a woman was killed in a crosswalk. And after the car hit her, he took off. And within a few moments, Tim made the decision to take off after him. And he chased him through the streets of San Francisco about 20 minutes. And he was able to get a partial plate. And so when he called me, I told him a few things. But the backstory is that Tim, even though he had accepted the Lord during high school and chose to be baptized and everything, but through the college years, he became he had a lot of questions. And so he, at the time, went away from the Lord. And so I knew that I couldn't really preach to him. But I told him three things. One, you're at the right place at the right time. You have amazing gifts just like your dad. You're just right there where you're supposed to be. And two, you gave honor to a woman's life you didn't even know. And three, which was the easiest one, life is fragile. And we absolutely never know when our time is up. And that was a Wednesday morning. And Friday night, most likely after midnight, he went to bed and did not wake up.
Mm. That is the incredible side story to this incident that he was a part of. He was able to share the partial license plate of the hit-and-run driver. The hit-and-run driver was arrested and charged. I was struck by the fact that the person who did or caused the accident or was the driver didn't receive a large sentence for what had happened. That was surprising to me, but also in that Tim's life was ended 3 or 4 days later. It was a very unusual set of circumstances.
Oh, totally. I mean, we couldn't have ever predicted that something like that was going to happen. I assumed that he would kind of get it, you know, because he just witnessed this horrific event, and then he's gone. And yet, through the course of the events, and we've ended up finding out that he actually did have an opportunity to come back to the Lord, if you will, and was given an opportunity through the series of events. So and that's what's really so incredible.
Your book is actually not only just the recounting of events, but also the recounting of a faith journey then.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and we don't get a lot of specific details, but we get enough. And it really is faith in that he was saved and that the Lord literally was chasing after his flock of 100. Or he left his flock of 100 to go after Tim, his one. And that's what's just so incredible. Excuse me for saying the word over and over again.
That's
okay.
But
it still amazes me.
There's another part of this story that's amazing. The lady, she was actually a mom, that was killed in the hit and run, had a parallel story of faith.
Exactly, exactly. That she was a Christian is also incredible. And Denise and I talked, her daughter and I talked quite quickly after we figured this all out, and yeah, the odds of that happening are just, it's not a coincidence.
It's not a coincidence.
You know, at least we know where she's at, and just knowing all of this made all the difference for us in our grieving process.
A great, great sense of comfort. Your story doesn't just deal with the tragedy of the events, but mostly the positive side of what transpired subsequent to the events that happened. Would that be the best way to describe your story?
Yes, I believe so.
And why did you write it? This is, I guess, a normal aspect of the grieving process, maybe, to share a story like this. But was that the only reason you chose to write it? And if so, how long did it take?
Every anniversary of Tim's death, which was September 7, 2010, or at least when he was found, something pretty incredible happens. And on the fourth anniversary, I was in a group of women, and this one woman was praying over us. And when she got to me, she prayed, and I thought, okay, that's good. And then she literally just stopped, and she rocked back on her back leg, and she looked at me, and she said, "You're supposed to write." And I said, "Am I supposed to write a Bible verse down?" I thought I was in trouble. And she goes, no, "You're supposed to write." And I said, "Oh, I know." And she said, "Well, you're supposed to start today."
Wow.
And literally on the fifth anniversary, I held the book in my hand. And so I would say it took a year. I mean, it took a couple of weeks to kind of, you know, I researched, I went to Google, and I have taken a lot of creative writing courses through my life and different things. And I've kind of always known I'm supposed to write. So it was just a confirmation that day. And truthfully, on September 22nd, when we found out everything what had transpired in those few days, I knew then, and I started telling everybody that would, you know, allow me to tell my story to them. And I saw the response that they would have. I mean, they would get tears in their eyes or cry or at least get goosebumps. And I used to hand it out or send it out in an email. And so now to be able just to hand somebody a book or for somebody to read the story is my greatest dream.
And why did you share your story? I mean, what do you hope to accomplish in the reader's hearts and in their thinking?
To give them hope that no matter what we think and that God really does have a plan for our lives and he will bring us back, and hopefully not in this way where, you know, their child or their loved one is gone. But God really is there. And like I say in the book, I believe that Jesus was in Tim's rearview mirror as Tim was in this young man's rearview mirror as he was chasing him.
Mm. Interesting observation of the event and how it took place. Is there a long-term benefit that has begun to reveal itself to you, maybe as an author or as a person or as a person of faith?
I think that we really need to do the best that we can to look to God for the answers, and that there may be situations in our life that are not pleasant, the death of a child or a spouse or whatever it is in everybody's life, because we all have some type of loss, is that, and I please forgive me if I sound like it's a platitude, but there really is a lesson in there. And in the relationship with others, we need to love first and show ourselves to be vulnerable and to experience life at its fullest so that we can be a conduit for our belief system in the Lord.
Very well said. There's the side story of the lady who lost her life in that accident.
Yes.
How would you describe that event as an impact on your family?
I really believe that there was something God was doing through that event. And I don't want to take away in any way what the Lau family had to endure, knowing that their mother passed this earth in really an unpleasant manner. But I just felt that Tim was right there at that crosswalk to do what he needed to do for them, and that God would somehow use this to bring him back.
As a parent, this must have been challenging. Were there challenges beyond the fact of recounting the story in getting this published?
Oh, gosh. I went over the book many, many times, I think as most authors do, and recounting the story of Tim's loss and having to witness again or think about what our daughter went through to find him in his bed. This is her baby brother. They're only 18 months apart. Or at least they were. And to have to see him lying there just had to have been absolutely horrific for her. And to go through that over and over again. And then to try to make sure that there's not anything in there that's going to upset anybody. And then having the challenge of realizing there may be, and then letting that go.
Wow.
You know.
128 pages. You've done a wonderful job in telling the story and also inspiring the reader. Is there another book in the future? Has this opened other doors of opportunity to encourage people who are going through a difficult time?
So far, there has been feedback that's all been good, and they've really enjoyed reading the story and has meant a lot to them. And as my sister-in-law said, it's a very hopeful book, even though it is about two people that have passed away, but it has a lot of hope in it. And I've already started a second book, which is about my relationship with my daughter. And so it's going to take a different turn. But in the death of our son, we definitely had to make some adjustments and deal with things that maybe we weren't dealing with as well when Tim was alive.
Hmm.
And so the Lord has healed me and my heart in many, many deep ways. And so as I was writing this book, there were things that came up that helped me to be able to release certain things.
Beautifully done. And we look forward to that next book when it's released. This titled A Most Incredible Witness. My guest author has been Emily L. Pitsford. Emily, I have listeners that maybe are going through a difficult time and will want to get a copy of this book. How do they do so?
You can go to westbowpress.com, and in the upper right, I believe it says bookstore, and then you search Incredible Witness. You can just do those two keywords and it'll come up.
Beautiful. And do you have a website as yet, or maybe a fan page that's been started?
I've done a Facebook page, so you just have to search Incredible Witness as well, and it should come up. Ultimately, there's going to be Twitter and Instagram, I believe.
Fabulous. Well, thank you for sharing your story. An important message for everybody who needs a little encouragement and may have been going through a difficult time. This book will have some answers for you and some insight that only the person who has experienced it can share. And thank you for sharing your personal story and the story of Tim's life.
Well, thank you for listening.
My pleasure. For Indie Book Publishing, Westbow Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Trafford Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book title is It Was a Privilege to Care for Her. And joining me from Ohio is author Keith A. Clefane. Thank you, sir, for joining me today.
I'm happy to be here, sir.
Well, this is a difficult book that you have written because it's a personal story. You were married to your spouse, probably 38 years before her health adventure began to take place. That was in 1998. Share with my audience a little of her story and about the health issue, health crisis that transpired at that time.
In 1998, in June, she had had a mammogram, which interestingly enough did not show anything. And then in September, she had gone to see her gynecological oncologist because she was having a problem with a breast. And he took one look at it and took her down to a surgeon's office where they did a biopsy. This was on a Tuesday. And on the following Thursday, she got the results of that biopsy, and she had stage 4 breast cancer. So
and
it happened so rapidly that it just, you know, was not detectable on the mammogram that came up in June.
And you had been married 38 years when this happened, and Muriel was a remarkable lady from what you've described in your book. She did go through the surgery and within a couple of days wanted to go out to dinner, and because she was active in church, in music, she wanted to also participate in that. Share that inspirational part of the journey.
Jay, it was just amazing. When she told me on Thursday that she had breast cancer, she says, "I've already made arrangements for tomorrow morning to have my right breast removed, and that's going to happen at 7 o'clock. And so the next morning, we were off to the hospital, and she had her breast removed. And that evening, she was still in the hospital, but she came home one day later, and we had tickets to go to the Akron Symphony Orchestra. So we went out to dinner, and at the end of dinner, she stood up and she fainted, which is really surprising. And I suggested to her that we forego the concert, and she said, "Absolutely not." So we walked to the concert, and we heard a wonderful concert by the Akron Symphony Orchestra. And on Sunday morning, she was up and ready to go to church and direct the chorale, which was her duty, so to speak, in our church. And I suggested to her that maybe somebody else might want to do the directing this morning. And she said, "Oh, no, I'm okay." So it was just amazing, because she said she prayed to the Lord to have peace, and the Lord gave her peace, and she said that she was going to have an adventure. And that's what it turned out to be.
It was an adventure. Was she always that resolute, or was this something that was a new introduction to her personality as she was going through this health crisis?
Well, Muriel had what I call a change of life situation. She had been a person who was very depressive at times and did not have a very good self-image, but it came a time when we went on a marriage encounter weekend. I don't know whether your listeners are familiar with marriage encounter, but
yes.
It was an opportunity to examine our marriage relationship. And she found out that a self-image is indeed that a self-image. And at that point in her life, she got a new lease on her life because she saw her life much differently. And I think that was part of the whole idea of her positive thinking when she got breast cancer, because it was never a case of why me, but why not me? How is the Lord going to use me to, you know, make people better about their resolve as far as cancer is concerned?
Phenomenal. Cancer is a very serious diagnosis when it happens, and it impacts a family in great many ways. Your family went through this journey for how many years?
Pardon me?
How many years did Muriel fight this disease?
She was diagnosed in 98, and she died in 03. So 5 years, not quite to the day, but 4 years in about 10 months.
What was your discovery in the process of taking care of her? Was there something that was an aha moment, a moment of inspiration that hit you that you had not been anticipating in this process?
I had never really experienced cancer in my life, although I did have a brother who died of cancer. But I think that the thing that was an aha moment for me was the absolute unequivocal attitude that Muriel had towards her cancer, and that up until the day that she died, she was expecting there would be a miracle, and she was going to survive and spend more time on this earth with me. And if she didn't, she was going to go to heaven to be with the Lord. This is one of the things about Muriel. She told me, first off, "I don't want to hear the word battling cancer, because in the word battle implies a winner and a loser. And if I beat this thing, I will be on earth with you. And if I don't beat this thing, I go to heaven to be with the Lord." and it's a win-win situation. And from the day one until actually, she did have one setback, and that was when she was diagnosed with a metastasis into the bone. But she quickly overcame that and said, okay, the train's on a different track, and we're going to continue on.
Incredible.
And I was just kind of carried along for the ride.
Incredible. What would you tell someone that perhaps has received the diagnosis of a loved one or themselves perhaps having to face the C word, cancer?
I think for the person who gets cancer, it has to be a case of resolving it in their own mind that the doctors and all of the research that is going on today will help them to beat that if they, will undergo the regimen that is prescribed for them, all of the chemo cocktails and so on. I think it's a chance to have a better life during the time that you have cancer, because it is a difficult period. No one knows what somebody goes through except that person who has the cancer and the loved ones who are helping to take care of that person.
Besides being an author, this is your third book. You also have 26 years at the University of Akron in the College of Business Administration, specializing in statistics, quantitative business analysis. Because you deal with statistics and detail things that are beyond me, you have included a lot of detail, at least as far as dates, times, and events, in your book. Share with the listeners a little of that and how that came about. Were those dates and times something that you kept track of consciously, or were they something that you had to go back and reconstruct?
Basically, they were... I had a date book, and I've always had a date book for probably the last 30 years. Today, I still have my date book, and I enter things into it, take Muriel to the doctor. And then, of course, at the time that I decided to write this book, I got all of the doctor's notes. I got all of the hospital notes. I got all of the radiological notes. I gathered all of the facts with regard to Muriel's illness that I could find. And then I could go back to my date book and coincide that with a radiological session and put it right into the book as a certain fact.
Mm. You have 286 pages. That's a lot of information you've shared. Was it complicated to recount the story and put it into book form?
The story unfolded all by itself because of, I judge, my diligence to getting all of the records that were available, because from the time that she was diagnosed to the time that she died, I did not miss one single doctor, x-ray, whatever session it was, bloodletting, whatever. I was always there with Muriel. And so I always had this information in the back of my mind because I was there. I didn't really have to reconstruct anything. I just had to fill out and flesh out the particular day that it was taking place.
In your book, I'm just noticing that you even have noted one morning in December of 1998, you ate at McDonald's and continued down I-55 toward West Memphis. You have some wonderful and remarkable recollection of dates and times and details. But the book itself also has conversational interludes in it where you are recounting conversation with family members and with your spouse. You must have had some challenges putting this together. What were those, and how did you overcome them?
Well, the book that you are reading is the second writing, if you will. The first one did not have any conversations in it at all. Hmm. And so it's obviously a known fact that all those conversations were manufactured, but they represent conversations that Muriel and I would have had. We had a very, very close relationship. You may have read in the book where We were both members of the faculty at the University of Akron, and she was in the English department, and I was in the College of Business Administration, and yet we shared an office together. And people were always, you know, surprised that, boy, you guys live together at home, and you drive to work together, and you share an office together. How can you be together so much? Well, we had a wonderful relationship and a love relationship, and it was easy to be together. And I think as a result of that, I was very comfortable with writing down conversations that I knew that Muriel and I would have had.
Right.
And did have.
What was your motivation, Keith? Why did you want to share this personal story with the world?
And one of the things I said earlier is that nobody knows what a person who has cancer goes through except those in the immediate family, the doctor and the nurses and all of those who are associated with her care. And I wanted to write a book that was primarily inspirational from the point of view of Muriel's life and having cancer, but I also wanted people to know about what it was like for somebody to have cancer and all of the things that they had to go through. And I also wanted to be an inspiration for cancer caregivers, because I think it's so important that a caregiver is as positive as they can be during the process that the person is going through cancer. In other words, I've heard of situations where somebody got cancer and the husband divorced the wife because he didn't want any part of it. Well, I just could not do something like that. I wanted to be part of Muriel's care, and I wanted to do the best job that I could. And in writing the book, I hope that I've conveyed that kind of information.
As far as her personal faith commitment, how important was that to the journey?
I think it was unbelievably important. Muriel had a faith in the Lord that, as I said, she was going to have a miracle before she actually died and get her out of all of this cancer that she had. And it was part of her life. We were Stephen ministers. Stephen ministers are people who work in a church and are helpers to people who are going through depressive periods or loss of a spouse or a loss of a job. And we come in and support those kinds of people. And Muriel was also the chairman of the Board of Human Care. She was part of the planning committee. She did the corral. And all of this was part of her faith journey that she had early from her life.
And it carried her through some difficult times, and you as well.
Absolutely.
Beautifully put. I think the book will be an inspiration to anyone that has questions about the journey of a loved one or perhaps their own personal journey as they go through cancer. This is more than just a biographical sketch. It is also one of inspiration and hope. So thank you for sharing that with us today. The title again is It Was a Privilege to Care for Her. Where do they get copies of this, Keith? Where can they find a copy of your book?
I believe if you go on the Trafford website and just, you know, punch in my name, Clefane, that you will find that, or punch in the title and you will get that also.
Very good. And Clefane is spelled K-L-A-F-E-H-N. And the first name is Keith. Thank you, sir, for joining me today and sharing her story and yours as well. Thank you for the inspiration behind it and the testimony of faith. Thanks again.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity to share this information with your listeners. It was a real great journey for me as well as for Muriel, and we were both blessed by it.
Thank you again. For Indie Book Publishing Trafford Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages.
Do you
you ever wonder if you're the only woman who runs errands in her yoga pants so it will look like she went to the gym? Or how about the only mom who feeds her kids raw cookie dough? Or are you the only one who cooks her family cold cereal for dinner? Do you need more laughter and less loudness? More self-love and less self-loathing? More joy and less judgment? You're not alone. Come to the living room, a place where we get comfy, candid, and confident together. Come seeking sanctuary and leave feeling renewed. We're saving a seat for you. Give yourself some living room today.
Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. Today we get to talk about my favorite subject, or at least one of them, food. Recipes from my Persian kitchen. And joining me is author Nazreen Z. Zarushki. Thank you for joining me today, Nazreen.
Thank you so much for having me.
Beautiful book. Lots of colorful illustrations and 168 pages, many recipes that I am not familiar with. Share with my listening audience a little of your background and how this book got to be written, and also share with them what the term or the general area of the world would be represented in the term Persian.
Persia is now, which called Iran, used to call Persia because it was Persian Empire. And in several years ago, they changed it to Iran. But we like still present Persia because it make it special. Then we don't you don't make a mistake between Iran and Iraq.
Sure.
And plus, our culture is totally different in that part of the world. We are the neighbor of Turkey, Russia, and Iraq, and Pakistan. And we are different because our culture background is different.
Is the food that you have represented in your book, is it influenced by these other cultures that surround Persia or Iran?
Well, of course, we don't have spices in my country. We import spices from India, like turmeric and pepper, cinnamon, but we don't really use too much of any of these. We use very mild. Then maybe you never feel it, but we have the most expensive with saffron, with more specific spices, which they don't use. Our neighbors, they don't use it. We use it the most.
Now, saffron is difficult to come by, is it not, in good quality form or not?
Saffron, yes, it is very expensive because they are a flour that has only maybe 2-3 stick of saffron there, so somebody has to pick them up and do that. Anyway, that throughout the world, Persian cuisine has a reputation for being among the most colorful and flavorful and healthy.
Beautiful. You've included a lot of recipes that would be pretty simple for even someone who is a very elementary cook like maybe I am, and should be easy to follow. What would you say is the foundation for most of the Persian cooking that you have outlined in your book? Would it be soups or would it be meat dishes? How would you describe it?
I can describe it. Our main dishes is rice, but we combine rice with meat, either fish or real cow, beef, and we use a lot of fish in our fish and lamb in our culture. I like beef. My favorite one is beef, but I'm filled with creative blend of recipes, and then we just put them together, all these, and lots of herb and spices and vegetables.
It's beautifully done. You mention a dish. My wife was trying to put something similar to this together a week or so ago, and it didn't turn out well because we couldn't find the right rice combination. But you talk about rice cream. What is rice cream?
Rice cream is a combine of milk and rice. That you can buy any kind of rice, but the secret of Persian cooking is low and it's slow. You cannot just make it in 10 minutes in the morning. You need to leave it with milk in low speed, and then at the end add sugar. If you add sugar at the first, you won't be able to make it. I explain everything in the book. The book is very, very well explained.
It is simple, and you've mentioned also something that is helpful. There are many of my listeners, and me included, that may feel intimidated by the different types of spices that are used or the ingredients. You mentioned rose water, which is a common or fairly common ingredient, but not in our supermarkets. But you suggest Mediterranean markets or even Chinese markets would have that ingredient.
Exactly. But these days you can find all my ingredients in regular common groceries at your neighborhood, even rose water. I wrote this book, I started 3 years ago, but now it's different. You can find everything all kind of a grocery.
You are living in North Carolina. I'll just mention that for my listeners so that they won't think I'm calling the Middle East somewhere. Nazreen, for my listeners, you are in North Carolina and yet are focusing on Persian cooking. Nazreen, what is your background that allowed you or prepared you to become an expert in Persian cooking?
Well, I just love the love of cooking was with me when I was little, and I start hanging around my mother, my aunt, my grandmother. Even kids were not allowed there. So I start, this book really is based on 40 years of a cooking experience. And is that the answer of your question?
Yeah, I think that answers it. One thing also, there's a lot of concern, or there's much concern in the eating industry, people like me, about health. Is this a healthier way to cook, do you feel?
Yes. If you cook the way I gave it to you, those recipes in that Persian cooking, you are very healthy. Because the way we put the spices and then herbs and together, and they are really good. This book is filled with a creative blend of recipes that advise culture and treasure, and also put the ingredients, seasoning, and herbs are very healthy. They have a very health benefit.
You have one recipe in here that I also was gravitating toward, having to do with a maligned vegetable, spinach. And yet there are ways to cook spinach that are very tasty, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yes. You just put just very little spray oil, and then cook your spinach, and then add, you can add garlic to it, you can add eggs to it, and it's very healthy and very delicious. You don't have to go too much to fry it or something like that.
You have a lot of soup recipes, which this time of year in the United States, we're recording this in the early fall and winter, and even spring is a wonderful time for soups. You have focused on many of those, noodle soups. You have chickpea and other ingredients that are commonplace. What do you, in researching and putting your book together and assembling everything, what was the one recipe that you enjoy the most when you are preparing it?
What my student enjoy the most is a chicken recipe soup. It's very simple. You just cook your chicken and then put the chicken aside. You can eat that with something else and add diced carrot, diced potatoes, and diced tomatoes, and at the end add some cilantro or parsley, depends on your taste, and cook it for an hour. This is a very delicious soup. You can add some fresh lemon juice, lime juice, both. This is what my student liked the most. But the pomegranate soup is my favorite.
Wow.
I love them all, but pomegranate soup is my favorite.
That's an interesting take on a vegetable or a soup. Is that considered a sweet soup, or is that something that you'd serve cold or hot?
Yes, hot, but you still can have it cold. But it's a little bit sweet, yes. I add myself, always I add 2 tablespoons of sugar. But some people, they can add or less. But my taste is 2 tablespoons of sugar, which I set here. But it's up to you. But it's so delicious.
You have included also some wonderful drink recipes. What is your favorite drink recipe that you have in
my
your book?
My favorite drink recipe is mint syrup vinegar.
Wow.
It's very, very easy to make because I have in my backyard, I plant some herbs, and always on season, I go there, and then I grab some mint, and when I made my simple syrup, and I add my vinegar, and I put a bunch of clean mint in there, and they cook for another 5-10 minutes, and then I turn it off, and I put it in a strainer, then I add water and ice to it. It's just it's very delicious drink. That's my favorite one.
It's a beautiful book, wonderfully done. The photos that are in the book, were you involved in the creation of those, or how was that done? Was that a complicated process?
People ask me if I had a food designer.
Yeah.
I was the food designer.
You were the food designer.
And then my photographer used to come once a week to my house, and then I cook 3-4 kind of a food, and I was responsible for all of them.
Beautiful. Well, for those who like to explore the different foods and cultures of the world, this is a beautiful book. Recipes from My Persian Kitchen. My guest has been Nazreen Z. Zereshki. Where do my listeners get a copy of your book, Nazreen?
They can go to Amazon. They can go Lulu Publishing Company, and they can go to Barnes & Noble digital one. They don't have the actual one. They have digital one. And also, they can have my phone number, and my phone number is 336-327-8843. Anybody can call me anytime they want to, or they email me, which is zn3ama@aol.com. And they always can call me, and if they need help, I'm willing to tell them that where they can get their ingredients and then how they do it if they have problems.
Very good. And are you planning to maybe start a blog or a website in the future?
Sure.
Wonderful.
Sure.
And has that been launched yet?
No, not yet.
All right. They can do a search under Recipes from My Persian Kitchen. That would be the easiest way to connect with you. And are you planning a follow-up book to this series?
Oh, yes. I have an appointment with my friend who's my teacher, and then she helped me to fix my grammar and typing and editing, light editing for me. I already started for vegetarian and dessert from all over the world. This time is not only Persian, it's universal.
Excellent. Thank you for joining me today and sharing your story. This is a wonderful book. I am certainly going to be trying some of the recipes personally and would recommend this to my listeners as well. Thanks for joining me, Nazreen.
Thank you so much. And I had a great talk with you.
Fantastic.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for joining me today. For Indie Book Publishing, Lulu Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.